That might be it.
All right. Being at 6 o'clock, we'll call the meeting to order and we'll start with the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We got a few additions to the agenda. A2 liquor license for the fire department. K1 EMR job description. It's also for the fire department. And then A2D, the planning commission minutes, minutes from 5/11. Is there anything else anybody has? Now I'd take a motion to approve.
Make the motion to approve.
Thank you, Ryan. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Sheldon. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you. Consent agenda, is there any item in there? If not, I would take a motion to approve.
Make the motion to approve.
Thank you, Ryan. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mel. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Visitors to the council. No, is that where this? Mm-hmm. Johan Marslin wants to talk about the disc golf improvements.
Wants to see what I'm talking about. There's some extra maps there. Hopefully everybody has one in front of you. I'm coming before council tonight a little bit out of order for how this would normally be done. It's because of personal scheduling issues. I won't be able to be here at your next council meeting when I hope this will be discussed amongst you. So I did want the opportunity to describe for you a project I'm kind of excited about that we've talked about on Parks and Rec. And that is an expansion of the disc golf course at Lions Park. Originally, this idea came up because I heard some talk about maybe putting in soccer fields, which would necessitate moving the disc golf course there. That kind of got my mind thinking how we could not only just move it, but we can improve it and make it an attraction to Kasson rather than just an amenity of Kasson. Disc golf courses come in three levels. One is considered a beginner course. There's a beginner course currently here in Kasson where you just kind of throw over open fields. There's one in Byron. There's also one that is just being put in this spring in Mantraville now. Sand Island's going to have a beginner disc golf course. The second type of disc golf course is what you call a tournament level disc golf course. It has a little bit more challenge, a little bit more usage of trees and angles and water to make it a little more challenging. It's the kind of thing that people will come in regionally from as far away as the cities that have tournaments of maybe 50 to 100 people to play. There have been tournaments played in Rochester, down in Stuartville. They all have tournament level courses. And then the third type is a professional disc golf course, which we're not talking about tonight. What I have laid out for you is what we kind of discussed at Park and Rec, how we can use some of the unused areas in Lions Park to facilitate a tournament level course that would bring new people to town. Now, the nice thing about disc golf courses is, unlike many other park amenities that you put in, like a playground equipment we put in last year where the equipment was $60,000, disc golf courses can be put in with a minimal of upfront expense. And the other nice thing about disc golf is there's a fairly organized community of people who love the sport. I've already spoken with President of the Rochester Disc Golf Association. He's very excited about this project, should it move forward. I've spoken with several other disc golf participants and enthusiasts, all of whom are interested in not only seeing it happen, but helping to make it happen. And this is really my reason for wanting to come before the council here tonight. This isn't yet an approved project by the Park and Rec Board, though I expect it to be. But I wanted you to have this project in mind as you consider what to do with the funds that had been allocated for the joint ventures project that no longer is going to be funded this year. Joint ventures, of course, was established to buy things that you wouldn't buy all by yourself that benefit both here in Kasson and in Mantraville and the school district. And I believe that a disc golf course would certainly do that. And I don't want the council to simply say, oh, here's the $10,000 to build the court. The reason I'm asking you to consider this and have this in your mind as you consider what to do with that money is I want to spend this summer taking that $10,000 and getting it matched by disc golf enthusiasts. You saw a proposed budget on the back. That's kind of a high-end budget. I really believe we can come in well under that, especially with volunteer labor for much of the installation costs. I think we could probably get the whole project done for about $26,000, $27,000 if we have the volunteer labor I expect. But if the city would be willing to say, this money that we were going to put into joint powers, we're not doing it this year, we'll put that for a matching fund, a matching grant or however you want to verbalize it, I think I could raise the other $10,000. I'm actually optimistic that we could, by 2027, match that $10,000. We've also talked about going to joint powers and asking them to put in $5,000-$6,000, and then the project would be mostly funded. Not only would it benefit the park using territory that currently, much of it, you'll see those, much of the black baskets are in wooded areas. Those wooded areas are currently in thorns and thistles. Nobody's going in there unless you're going in to do things you don't want people to see. It would open up these areas so that there's access to them, there's visible sight to them, and it would turn some of them into actual picturesque spots in Kasson. If you'll look, I'll give you just an example or two so you can drive by and see. If you look at hole number 6, it's on the bottom down by the highway. There is a 125-year-old oak tree back in there where that basket's going to go. And there could be a beautiful little wooded grotto there where we'll throw into that would just add to the beauty of Lions Park. Similarly, on hole 8, you'll see a basket there. That one is on a rise that overlooks a horseshoe bend in Maston Creek. And you'd never see it. You wouldn't even know it's there, but it's a beautiful little spot. I really think we could upgrade the park for a very reasonable amount of money and do it with a lot of volunteer labor. So anyway, I'm not here to go over the whole project. There certainly will be a presentation from Park and Rec coming hopefully very soon, but I did want to give you why I'm excited about it and ask you to keep in the back of your mind, this money might be well spent doubling it from the community and putting into disc golf park. I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. No mayor's report, public forum, public hearing, committee report, EVA.
All right, so I'm excited to present to you this evening a new program. It's the Technical Assistance Program, or TAP, is the abbreviation. But the EDA did discuss it at our last meeting in May, and we're excited to put this forward. Essentially, it comes out of the Rural Entrepreneurship Ventures program and the remaining fund dollars that we have to put forward. We talked about a few different things, and this program is kind of where we landed. So what is it? It's a program really that matches Kasson entrepreneurs with different technical service or technical assistance providers who can help them with various aspects of their business in order to help their business in Kasson grow. So it can be anything from like legal help or financial help or marketing, accounting, that sort of thing. So you apply for this program, and then if it gets approved by the EDA, and then if approved, you could receive up to 75% of the cost of the project, up to $1,000, the lesser of those. So yes, I did work on getting it up on our city website. This is just the EDA's page up here on the screen. And then I've created a specific page for this program. And I've even put the application online. So it is live as of right now. People can go on and submit their application to the program immediately. So, yes, excited about that. If there's any questions from the board.
So if someone runs a business out of their house, like Etsy or a Mercari site, they could apply for this?
Yeah, so that falls under the applicant eligibility categories. So you either have to own or lease a commercial space in Kasson, or operate a home-based business in Kasson, or you have to be a local resident, so not necessarily a Kasson resident, but you have to be interested in launching a business in Kasson.
Do they have to be spending that money in Kasson? So if they were meeting for a tax strategy CPA, do they have to meet with someone in Kasson, or could it be someone outside of the city limits?
They could be outside.
We did discuss that at the EDA, and I think one of the things that Ian's going to do is we'll have a list of potential folks you could work with, you know, in different categories. For example, marketing, tax strategy. That's an easier one because we do have some good, you know, providers there. But, so we'll have that available for them. But I think the EDA felt like just purely restricted to that, it might not be possible to do anyways because there may be some consultant that you might need out of Rochester, for example.
Yeah, try to keep it local as best we can. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Well, and if you do read in there the funds that we have available through the REV program, they have to be used up by the end of this year.
Right. Yep.
So if you know anybody that's looking for this assistance, get the word out because they got to have the project completed before they get their money. So that way we can verify it's done. All right. Thank you. Planning Commission.
All right. So just one item of conversation from the Planning Commission meeting that we held on Monday. We were approached by some folks from EDF Power Solutions. They're kind of handling some of the project work with the Byron Solar project. So the particular request had to do with a particular piece of property that's way out far east of Kasson, kind of close to the county line out on County 34. But essentially, there's a transmission line that's going to go on this particular property connecting from the solar field to the Byron substation. The right-of-way easement has already been issued and everything for the transmission line to go within it. It's just that there's some new owners of the particular parcel and they're more interested in separating out that easement area so that it's not property that they own anymore. It'll be owned by the project itself. So the EDF Power Solutions folks did go to the county first to get it approved. However, the width of the parcel that they want to separate out is too narrow for the county's standards. However, since it is within our urban expansion zone, the city can approve a smaller width than what would otherwise be allowed. So we did take a look at it. Staff didn't really have any concerns with separating that parcel out. They're projecting it to be about 150 feet wide. I can show the example up on the screen here. Let's see. And then the folks from EDF Power Solutions were there on Monday as well. They did talk about it a bit. Let's see. And then the Planning Commission, they did recommend approval of it. So moving forward, the county just needs to have approval from the city to allow it to go forward and actually separate that parcel out. So here up on the screen now is the example. If you're familiar at all with the area, this is like that Marquette Grain Systems, and then next to that is a property that was supposed to be or is used by the LC Trucking folks.
The horse farm
on the south side. But yeah, this area in blue is how they want to separate the large parcel out.
What is the county's recommendation for the width?
Well, they didn't really have a recommendation. I mean, because it's their minimum width requirement is like a quarter of a mile or something like that. So really, it's in the city's hands.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, if the property owner was giving them an easement, this wouldn't have come up. It's just a matter of they're splitting the lot.
Okay.
So I think, you know, Planning Commission talked about it, and basically, you know, whatever anyone's feelings are about the project itself, we talked about, you know, it is going to limit the city's growth to the southeast. You know, there's 1,800 acres of solar panels going in there, but there isn't anything we can do about that. Mm-hmm. And whether you like it or not, this is, it's a power line that's going through a lot that's an area that probably won't be annexed into the city limits, certainly in my lifetime. I mean, it's a long ways out. So their length, their project's 35 years. I think it's what they said on their presentation. I don't know, did you include that in the packet?
I did throw it in Dropbox. Okay,
so yeah, if you have any questions on it. But otherwise, I mean, there wasn't a really good reason to deny it. So we, the Planning Commission felt like it was going to, you know, something that needed to go forward. So
the solar panels, are they going on the, Ian, would you go back to the map?
Oh, yes.
Oh, no. All panels are on the other side of 14.
Show. Yeah, that's a big solar farm.
That's just a transmission line.
Eagle Farms, I think, sold a big chunk of there.
So this is the whole entire project. So Highway 14 is here. And then there's, like, different areas of the solar farm itself. Let's see.
What's south of 14.
Is there going to be anything built, like, above ground in that easement area?
No, the parcel, all the transmission line will be above ground.
Yeah. Power lines.
All high voltage transmission typically would be above ground because of the serviceability of it. And the other parcels, as they mentioned, they just couldn't, they got easements on everything else, they just couldn't get an easement on this property. So
okay, that's a good question.
It creates a strange shaped parcel, but if there's going to be things constructed on it, they can always, if that is taken down, they can always, you know, put the parcels back together.
That's so true. You know, at some point in the future, I mean, either the solar field would be renewed or it would be, you know, if, depending on how things go in 35 years, it might be eliminated. And that high, you know, that's the only reason the high voltage transmission line would exist. So,
is that the railroad tracks in, right on the north side of that?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that parcel is constrained by the railroad tracks on the north side, too. Yep.
Yeah.
So it runs around the railroad tracks right there, which is probably why they're utilizing that corridor, because it's already probably in existing, you know, it's limited a little bit by that already, too.
Would there be, I know you break it up to 150 feet, would there be then restrictions if they build on that property, how close they can be to the transmission line?
Oh, I would imagine so, yeah.
That'll be future problems.
I mean, it's not a city. This isn't, it's in the urban expansion zone, which is why the county punts it to us. Mm-hmm. Basically, if we say no, then the county will take charge of it. But yeah, it's definitely going to be, it's in the city, it's in the county's, you know, whatever their setbacks are. And okay. I don't know what that is off the top of my head.
Okay. All right. Do we need to approve?
Yeah, that? I think planning zoning was looking for a final sign off. Is that the recommendation was to approve?
Yeah, and then we can just reflect that in the minutes. And then I can send that to the EDF Power Solution folks and the county, and that should be what they need from us.
Okay, I guess I would look for a motion for the parcel subdivision.
Make that motion to approve.
Thank you, Ryan. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Sheldon. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you. Next, old business. It's our chicken and animal ordinance revisions.
And I think at the last meeting, there was a little bit of discussion, but that was a fast meeting. So we wanted to have a few more people here tonight to discuss it. Linda and I have talked about it some more, too, and I think she's included in there kind of a council action sheet and then staff recommendations, you know, basically doing a special permission this year for the current person, and then in the future we would look at, I think we were saying 12, was it, Linda, for post-secondary schools, which we allow that for FFA. Superintendent Geese also sent a letter of support in. She mentioned that she had talked with those folks up at the school, and they're very interested in that. So, you know, I think that's a good happy medium. That's what Rochester allows us, that number, too. So, anyways, I think that's kind of where we're at. So.
So
it's up to you guys if you want to have any other discussion on it or if you're comfortable with that.
I guess, would they have to reapply every year for permits?
I don't think the chicken permits are yearly, are they?
They are.
It is.
Just the regular ones.
Yeah, they run through the police department, actually. So it's not something we necessarily administer.
So we would make even the schools, and
so
then we would know for sure if they're doing it.
And there might be some years where they would choose not to do it at all. That's true.
Well, I just wanted to make sure.
In the G1 doesn't have the number 12, it just says
nope, dashes. That's because we were discussing that tonight.
I was wondering where the 12 came from.
Yeah, we had different numbers brought up during previous meetings, like different cities did it, and 12 was just the number because Rochester, and seemed like a easy number. It's 6 right now for, and if you look in our ordinance, if you're over, where was it, 15,000 square feet, was it? 15,840 square feet, you could have 12 anyway. So.
Does that covers the school, it covers TAC, it covers...
Well, we would add the school as a secondary high school or university.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're home...
Because TAC doesn't have that many feet.
Right.
So that's why we call it a post-secondary.
Yeah. But, like, the school would, but they say you just have to get your permit. So that's kind of another reason why 12 was picked. So, I guess with that, if there's no more questions or concerns... I take a motion to approve the ordinance with 12 chickens for secondary high school, university, you know, post-secondaries.
Is that still with allowing the 18 for this year?
And
yes.
Yes, and 18. Yes, Ms. Johan.
I no longer need 18. We had somebody come pick up 8. I now have 13 birds, and one of them's probably going to be a rooster. So
we'll leave it at 12 then.
Well, there you go.
So we'll leave it 12 for everybody. No special permit then.
12. All right. Okay.
Yeah, and as in the ordinance says, no roosters, no ducks, just strictly.
That didn't change yet.
Just hens.
All right. I will make the motion to approve the updated ordinance, the 12 chickens for secondary universities.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mel. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
And can we approve the animal ordinance, too?
And that one was...
It's got the yellow phrasing on there.
And that one?
That's adding the except chickens. Mm-hmm. It's just adding the wording.
Something that police
number 6
requested earlier based on that animal issue we had with the dogs earlier this year.
But so are we saying by changing it, are we calling chickens a domestic animal? Or is it?
No.
It says poultry except chickens.
Okay.
They're an exception to the livestock.
Okay.
Domestic animal.
Kind of in the middle.
Okay. There's no other questions. I guess I would take a motion to approve.
Make the motion to approve.
Ryan, do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mel. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Polls? All right, thank you. Number 2, lots with no sidewalks. So this has been ongoing for years.
I'm down to 3.
Yeah, she's down to 3. So we wanted to get a kind of final sign-off from the council on how you want to pursue these last 3.
And, I mean...
There's photos in your packet there.
The Mormon church is quite large. That's very expensive. That's going to be very expensive for them. The other one, Bigelow's, is the Zen Garden, which just needs it to go up 15th, because eventually there will be development.
On the backside, yes.
On the backside of that. And the other one is that Luff one, Northeast.
On 7th Street Northeast.
Yep. And she came in last August, mm-hmm. and she had a story, and then she was going to maybe put the lot up for sale, and it hasn't been for sale. So Charlie is getting bids to do our sidewalk work.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, I want to know what you want to do. Do you want me to send one more letter giving him a chance? Do you want me just to send him a letter saying, this is going to happen at this time and we'll assess you?
This has been a 3-year process.
Or
we
longer.
We had several people in town.
Abide.
We asked them to do this, spend the money right away and get it done. By not responding to any of the letters, I would say they're okay with us just moving forward. If they had a concern after getting the letter, they would have reached out to us to say, hey, this is a concern for me. I need help doing this. I need time, more time. But since they haven't reached out, they must be okay with it moving forward with us solving this issue for them.
Well, definitely the 2 individual lots, the residential lots. The church one, that's going to be a big bill.
Could we do the church in phases?
Yeah.
you know, I mean, there are different options for them. I think, you know, your point about communication, you know, not having a response from them, I mean, I'd be interested in what they had to say.
Yep.
They you know, may say, oh, it's fine, go ahead, do it. They may say, no, absolutely not. You know, we may be able to assess them, and they could pay that off over
time.
15 okay. years. You know, we've used a petition waiver program with a lot of different things. People have done it with their water softeners, all kinds of, you know, the sump pumps and things like that. Some of these, I mean, there are options. We just need communication from them and direction from you on how you want us to pursue it. Because I think there are, you know, even some of these, for example, the one over on 7th, I mean, that could be a deferred assessment where we assess it, and then at the point in time when that lot is sold or the property is sold, then it could be fully charged. I mean, there are different ways to do it where it wouldn't necessarily hit the bank book for the resident, because obviously we want to have it done. We also don't want to hit their bank book, you know, without having a way for them to make it, you know, facilitate the payments.
And the one on 7th really would be beneficial to get for that park.
It would, yes.
Does it make sense to simply say, this is the plan, we are doing this on this date, we would like to talk with you beforehand if you have any concerns, but this is what's going to happen?
I mean, certainly I think, you know, we're glad to send another letter, kind of make it almost like a final, like we'd like a response. Otherwise, you know, the plan going forward is to assess you for it and
we will have it done this season.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
I mean, I think explaining that this is it.
So then they get one more last.
If you are assessing the property, though, pursuant to 429, don't you have to have the public hearings on it?
Sure, and we might have to do that. Yeah. I mean, similar to what Rochester does, where they just send out letters, and they've done that as part of a plan, you know.
So then the letters would set the date for the public hearing and everything else to backing it up far enough that it doesn't interfere with the dates that you're planning to do the work.
Sure. I mean, communication from the resident is probably the number one thing we want to generate.
Right.
Because if they have a better way of doing it, as Linda mentioned last year, the other resident came here and said they were going to get quotes, haven't seen any action or any motion on it. I would love it if we don't have to do the work. We prefer not to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's much better if they do it themselves or they can get a contractor in. It probably will cost less for everybody involved.
Sure.
However, if that's not possible, you know, the direction from council was to close these gaps. We've cut down from, I don't know, 15
12,
to 3. 15.
Yeah.
Right.
But there are a couple of them are big ones.
Right.
And I think we want to just finish closing that gap up if we can. So.
Okay. I think we send the letter saying that we are going to move forward with sidewalks and...
We could set it for a public hearing.
And set it for
the next meeting.
Yeah,
sure.
Review, and then it would be have to have, and then you could set it up along for the following meeting and analyze it if that's the plan. Nobody shows up.
Yeah, so...
If you're going to send a letter, I would make it a...
Official,
Makes sense.
Take care of that stuff.
That work?
That's where the council wants to go. It's fine with me.
Yeah, we've been asking for years to clean this up, and we've had residents asking us, and we've had some move forward, so I think it's time to finish the project, as hard as it is. Okay.
All the rest of that, last year at this time there were 5 or 6, those other ones all put new sidewalk in.
Yep.
Okay. I think it's fair. We've asked residents that are in those areas, they've complied, we should follow through.
And those are residents that are complaining that the other people...
Right.
Yes.
I mean, it's...
It's, yeah.
Just be fair.
Yeah.
All right.
There's...
Next, we'll talk about the festival garbage workers.
So if you recall, this is an issue that was brought up by the Park and Rec Board. They had feedback from different folks, and one of our staff, Ben Langan, was questioning what the process and why, you know, we were paying for it. So the recommendation, I think, is that at this time we slide those responsibilities over to the festival committee, and we increase the allocation that we contribute towards the festival to help compensate those employees. We felt like that removes the liability from the city in terms of it's an employment relationship between two separate entities then, and it seemed like the cleanest way to do it. It's their festival. We want them to manage it. At least that's the... I think, I don't know if we had a recommendation for a number, but I think we were looking at like $500 increase to the contribution to the festival committee for that.
What do we do now?
$10,000.
Okay. All right. Any questions or concerns from anybody?
we all agreed at Park Board to move to this direction.
I think it's the best for the city, too. Sure. Takes the liability. So. Okay, I would look for a motion.
Make the motion.
Okay. We have a motion to increase the fee from $10,000 to $10,500. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Sheldon. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Up next, administrator's report.
So I've got a few things in here. Legislative session is getting to the end here. A lot of things still being talked about. The bonding bill is probably the number one issue that they're talking about, and there is not a lot of clarity yet on whether it'll happen or not, or if it'll be a larger bonding bill or not. There's a discussion between $1 billion and $1.5 billion. Obviously, there's a lot of play there, and there's really the Senate is probably the biggest holdup because you have to have that supermajority to approve it, and a lot of folks are concerned about that. So thankfully, we don't have any bonding bill items this year, because I wouldn't be surprised at all if it got punted into next year. EDA, talk about that a little bit. Some new members. We appreciate those new members and the work they're doing. That's really good. We have a full board now, and Ian talked about that TAP program. We're going to try and use up the rest of that residual funding from the REV folks. We put that to work. I think we had about $9,000 left, was it? So we'll be matching that by 25% match to make sure that we top that off. We've submitted an application to the Minnesota Design Center. They're looking at a small Minnesota communities program for housing. So I know housing is not quite as much of a focus now as it was in the last 3 years, but we're still trying to keep in line with that, knowing that there's demand pressures here in the Rochester Metro. And appreciate Nancy Zaworski. She's kind of working with the Minnesota Together folks, and we've been able to be in contact with her, and she helped us get that application in. Aquatic Center. Season's approaching really quickly here. I think they were supposed to start filling the with water today. I don't know if they did or not. I'll have to go up and take a look. But they did finish resurfacing the area that had deteriorated in the concrete and the main lap pool. We also did a lot of repairs to the activity pool. There was the small child slide had been damaged by winds, so we were able to get that repaired and replace some equipment there. They've got some folks coming in, Newman Pools, to take a look at some of the internal mechanicals to make sure that everything's operating correctly. As you know, we levied additional funds last year into the park budget to try and do more preventative maintenance to extend the life of the pool, knowing that we'd like to try to defer that larger bond issuance a little longer if we can. Some information on the HOA rules, which is be interesting considering we have some new HOAs that are coming into to Caston here over the next year or two. Some good news on the MISO capacity auction. Not as good as 2 years ago, but a lot better than last year. It's about 20% lower than last year in terms of total cost, so appreciate that. They saw a decline, and a lot of it has to do with, for good or for bad, the federal government forcing certain resources to stay on the network. So, I mean, you may have read about it. Like I said, whether you like it or not, the administration has said some of these coal plants, they just have to stay open. What that does help is it does help with those peaking days. So days when we have, you know, very little sun and little wind, like in the wintertime, the coal can ramp up and it can be something that's used for that firm power. So it did see a good thing for us in the MISO market this year. Let's see. Otherwise, the tax omnibus bill was forwarded through the Senate. There's some local proposals that were included there. We've discussed that in the past. Still somewhat of a problematic process for a lot of folks, but if there was something that came up, we would certainly, you know, be able to work with our legislators to get that there. And I think that is all I've got there. Just one note that we do have a work session scheduled for 5 p.m. on June 17th before the next council meeting. Please let me know if you can be there, if you can't make it, so we can make other arrangements.
Has anyone reached out to you about EGIP?
Yep,
there's CGIP, which is the state's health insurance, statewide health insurance. EGIP is an educator group insurance pool, but it's looking to take over PEEP. I believe we are currently part of PEEP.
No, we're not.
Not anymore?
No, we were PEEP, I think, 2022, and then there was a 50% rate increase. Yep. They had asked us, so we switched over to a single small insured group. Yep. with Blue Cross.
EGIP is looking to include cities and counties.
Okay.
So I don't know if anyone from Education Minnesota has reached out to you, but if
I'm not aware of anyone,
the goal is to combine
yeah.
schools, counties, and cities staff
sure.
into one EGIP.
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 Okay.
EGIP.
I will actually ask our insurance person.
It's at the House right now. It's being heard. Aaron Wilkie, a local resident, has spoke about it a few times, but people dissolve, and then any city and county that wants to join in could.
Okay.
It could save us on health insurance.
Well, I mean, obviously, we're always looking for some kind of savings or plan improvements.
Yeah.
You know, even if there aren't savings, we want to plan improvements for them. So, yeah, no, I will definitely take a look. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay.
Any questions?
Thank you, Tim. Engineers report.
All right. Thank you, Mayor and Council. Again, here tonight talking about lead service lines. So getting old to some people, but it's ever-evolving on our side of things. So just a quick reminder, past actions, EPA required cities to remove lead service lines within their communities. Minnesota Department of Health regulates that on the state side. They've had some money. We did the inventory working with staff. Some property owners self-reported. We submitted the inventory on time to MDH, Minnesota Department of Health, as required. So now fast forward to today, or actually past council action, you guys did actually approve a submittal for the replacement of lead service lines. And today in your council packet, we have the engineering agreement to ultimately develop a construction contract to replace those lead service lines. That replacement would happen in this construction season, may end up spilling into 2027. Not sure all these contractors are going to get all this work done in southern Minnesota or all across the state and even the country to do the work, but we'll see what happens here. So it would be engineering to ultimately pothole down at the curb stop, even go into the home where the meter is, and then out to the main to replace that private service line from the main to the house. So the city will hold the contract with the contractor, and that'll be reimbursed with the money that was secured through MDH through your previous application. So that's what's in front of you tonight. Ultimately, what are the goals, right? It's to, one, remove the, in our case, galvanized service lines that are considered lead from the regulations from the EPA. So that's number one, to, you know, provide safe drinking water on the private side of things. But then secondly, there is some increased reporting the city has to complete. And increased testing, so the quicker that we can get off this list, get them all replaced, would be better for us. So that's a second goal. Just a little sidebar, if we are moving forward, we will likely be discussing with the city attorney a waiver, because we are going to be on private property in a private home, about what the expectation is and what the limitations of our liability is, and then the expectation of carpet, if your water meter is behind some sheetrock, that we're not going to start rebuilding basements as part of this project. What is in it for the property owner? They get their lead service line replaced for free from money provided from the Department of Health. So that's what's before you tonight. I'll pause there, see if you have any questions, comments, or concerns.
Do you know a rough estimate how many?
Oh, sorry, 20. In the agreement, it does say 25.
Oh, sorry.
But like I said, staff has been working on this kind of on the back end. I think there was five that were actually declared as lead when we first reported it. So new Charlie Dappin went in, I think, all those houses and got them all crossed off the list. One of the things that we're a little frustrated with on our side of things, we did the self-reporting tool. A lot of those are very inaccurate. So we wanted to check up on those leads right away to make sure we didn't have any lead service lines. So of these 20, that number may still be decreasing. But the other thing we had going on is when we did the sump and lateral program, we knew that this was coming. So during that sump and lateral program, some of the properties, we actually went in there and checked the water services. We're kind of out in front of it, so kind of doubled up when we were in the house, so, which was good. So I think our inspector probably did a lot better job, more accurate job, than what the property owner self-reported, because we're finding that accuracy pretty low. But, you know, we're dealing with whatever we got to deal with. So we'll verify that those 20 do actually need replacing through the replacement process. So we'll work with staff on that. We've got a list. We've got a little map, so we're going to start working on them. A couple of people we know. Council person, I think, brother's on the list, so one thing we'll be working through. So all things we'll figure out, and if they don't need replaced, we won't replace them. And if they do, we'll get them done and get it paid by MDH. So, and I will note, too, so this is the ones that are known. There's a fair amount that are unknown on the city side specifically, because we can't see it at the meter. So that's from the curb stop at the property line to the main. So we won't totally be off the list. We'll still have some unknowns, which maybe some additional funding in the future to figure those out. Minnesota Department of Health is talking about finding those out so we can totally be off the list, but not quite there yet. So stick with us. It's evolving every day. It's interesting. It's a good program, but it's just a lot of stuff going on and a lot of steps to the process. And
anybody else got any questions for Brandon? Not. Take a motion to approve the professional service agreement.
To approve the agreement.
Ryan, do we have a second?
A second.
You, Sheldon? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it. On to personnel. We got fire chief and assistant chief job descriptions and EMR job description.
I think maybe we should lead off with the EMR one. I know we've talked a little bit about the other ones too, but and I'm not sure, and I'm not sure exactly how it started, but so I think the chief's here tonight, so I appreciate that, Joe, maybe to talk a little bit about that. It sounds like they're looking at doing a two-track employment in the fire department, where there would be some folks that are involved that are simply they're just EMR. I don't know if there'd be some that would just be firefighters, or maybe you can give some clarification on that, Joe. And then you got the job description here for those folks.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. Over the last few years, we've had several members within the community reach out and basically just say at the time they were like, hey, we really want to be interested, you know, in joining and helping, you know, it's the thing that we can do to be a part of the community. But we don't want to be a firefighter. They don't, no interest in the going into burning buildings when everybody's running out. They didn't have any interest in that. And their focus was more, was always on the medical side only. So I've been hesitant over the years to go down this road. And we've gotten to a point where we're busy enough. The extra manpower would be beneficial. So we've been discussing it with the officer group at the end of last year, and decided when we opened up that we would go down that road and see what kind of feedback we got from the community in applications if we opened up a medical only and then a fire medical position like we currently have within the department. We did get this go around. I think I got probably 10 or 11 applications. Quite a few of those we had to turn away just because they were simply out of our service area. Several from Rochester, several from Byron. That were thinking more that this was a full-time position, or that we would have like daytime shifts for them to be, you know, at the station and things like that. So we had to turn some of those away. In the end, though, we did end up we've got two applicants that are here in town that are we're going to continue to move forward. Obviously, if you guys approve all of that, we'll continue to move forward. In the process with them, putting them on, because that's ultimately the need. Obviously, if you guys, you know, see the numbers, you know, last year we ran about 730 calls, about 600 of those were medical calls. With our growing community and the way we keep growing, those numbers are going to only continue to go up and up, as well as the fire side as well. So the focus and the need right now is more members to basically take that burden on. And we got what I feel out of the six applicants that we've got right now, two of the six are medical only, and they look to be, so far they look to be good potential candidates to be on the department. So that's kind of the reasoning behind why we decided to make that stretch and offer just the medical only. So
you'll have a potentially right now. I mean, you only have it's fire and medical right now. You don't have any other approval for medical only yet.
No, but, there's no other separation yet.
So, is there an option? Now, I mean, if we open this up to medical only, is there one that you're going to, where people don't want to do medical and they just want to do fire?
I would say no, because that's not necessarily a need that we have. Okay. This change is predicated based on the need that we do need that higher number of folks. So if we can grab more folks that want to, you know, be involved in just the medical side, plus it's, at the end of the day, it's less expensive for the city. There's less training, and there's less gear and equipment. Obviously, if they're not, we're not putting them in fire gear, we don't have to, you know, outfit them with, you know, close to $6,000 or $7,000 worth of turnout gear. Mm-hmm. So
and I was just looking through the essential functions, and one of them says participates in emergency medical aid training, and then it says fire training.
They will participate in our fire trainings to the point where they're, because every fire call we go to, Dodge Center Ambulance is called as well. For rehab situations and potential medical situations that could come up with either victims that are on scene or potentially things that happen to us as members, you know, the guys that are fighting the fire or whatever that might be. Myself and the rest of the officer group, we feel like that's just a benefit. If we tie them in, then that way they know and understand from a training standpoint what they're going to get into, what they're going to be seeing. You know, they're not going to be putting air packs on and running through, you know, some of that training. It would be medical training geared towards whatever we happen to be doing for that fire training that evening.
So they would be on scene, but they would not be.
Nope.
They'd be out.
We would use them on those calls to set up rehab stations and assist Dodge Center Ambulance. Yep. Yep.
I just wanted to make sure when I seen that, then obviously.
Yeah.
But it does make sense, so because they see how everything goes.
So for example, I don't know if you heard about the big mutual aid fire that we just had north of Manorville, with 12 or 13 departments that were there, you know, 60 to 65 firefighters on scene. There was one medical person on scene for all of those people, which is not enough. So if we had, you know, when we have our dedicated, you know, our dedicated medical staff, if they can respond to those situations, that's kind of what we're looking for, is one that looks out for ourselves, right? You know, if we can help our mutual aid partners, you know, be a little bit safer on scene, that's a benefit. But I'm being selfish and want to make sure that our guys are protected.
So anybody else got any other questions for Joe? I mean,
I think it's a long time coming with the shift in numbers, with how much you spend time on medical calls. I think it's a good idea to offer this to people in the community that want to be a part of it. So it's a good thing.
Were there any concerns from the department?
No. Everything that we've gotten, they're excited for the extra numbers. You know, we've tried to do what we can to separate the on shift hours and, you know, lessen that load a little bit for the guys, and this is one of those things that will help with that. So
I guess another question I got too, if you, let's say you get two now and you get four more down the road, how are they all get into scene if they're not going to be qualified to drive the fire trucks? They'd only be able to drive the rescue units.
Well, we've got several pickups, so I mean, we would, yeah.
I just wanted to make sure they were there, but you know, not driving something they're not.
Yeah.
Certified to drive, you know.
Yep, absolutely.
Because I have a feeling, you know, I want to make sure you have enough equipment. You don't want to be coming down.
Yeah.
Needing more.
Yep. Yes.
I'm going to show my ignorance, but other than the really big trucks, what specialized driving training would people need?
We do a driving course every year just to make sure. Right now the state doesn't require us to have any kind of additional license or anything like that. Currently they've talked about it for years, making fire departments have a class B license, but because it's emergency and they allow it. Yeah, other than making sure, one, that they're comfortable, you know, I mean, that's the biggest thing is, you know, we don't even let our new guys that are on the fire side drive stuff until they've had some trainings and meetings and stuff like that to get through you know, where we, one, we know they're comfortable with it, and just because of the size difference, they're such bigger trucks, so.
They won't even let us drive it.
Would there be plans to encourage the medical responders to learn or to get the proper certification in case there was a need?
If they want to go down that road, you know, the obviously the ultimate hope would be is, you know, you put somebody on the medical side and they're around for a while and they're like, oh, that fire stuff doesn't look too bad. I can do that. And then we, you know, we put them through and then they just get, you know, kind of transitioned over to that other side. I mean, I say that, but there is no sides. A member's still a member. You know, we just, but yeah, we would, if that's ultimately something that they're interested in, because other than in-house training, we don't send any of our members off to, you know, like St. Cloud has a huge driving course and, you know, things like that. We basically do that all in-house with being, you know, comfortable with those trucks, and ultimately they would have to be that and we would have to be that with them.
Okay.
You know, like I said, we're not going to let just anybody jump in the truck and drive it.
Thank you.
So if you did EMRs, you know, emergency medical, would they be, obviously you're all one department, so they would be able to move up in ranks if they even though they're not a firefighter, they could still move up to be a captain, a lieutenant?
That would be on the fire side. I mean, eventually if this works, Dan, and hopefully it does, and we're able to grow this side of it, we would eventually get to the point where we would probably have an EMR officer, you know, whether it was an EMR captain or lieutenant specifically on the, and they would go up that side. We would probably want them to have, because of, you know, and Lynn and I talked earlier, we've got a whole bunch of other job descriptions that we've got to go through after some of these ones. You can see that progression, you know, so many years on and so many years on. Well, a lot of that is the fire training and off, you know, how many years have you been on, how many years have you been an officer, and some of those kinds of things. I know we run a lot of medical calls, and obviously that's important, but it's nothing compared to what one fire call and the devastation that can have if you don't have the right leadership. So they would have to have the right education. They'd have to have the right training, from the medical side before we would look at that, you know. I mean, obviously everybody's open to apply, you know, for the positions that we post internally, because a member's a member. But you know, we would still have stipulations in the job descriptions and qualifications and things like that we would look at.
Because that definitely would have to be listed out before,
yeah,
for anybody, just so they know.
Yep.
So, and I don't, you know, I didn't see it in here. I didn't read every word on your job description, but I wanted to make sure.
Yeah, right now we're not. I mean, right now we're not looking for that. You know, I mean, we would, that to me, that would be down the road a ways, and we'd have to see what kind of, you know, what kind of qualifications and how this actually goes and what kind of response we get. You know, moving forward with community members, and you know, once we get that out and we get members kind of in the groove of responding and some of that kind of stuff, and if it works or if it doesn't work.
One question: so, could you give like a scenario of, say, a call happens and then the EMR responders, so they would go to the fire station? I would call. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, so currently we get paged out, whether it's fire or medical. Everybody shows up. Right now, depending on the call, if we get a large enough response, so if it's a fire call, if we get a large enough response, our officers are telling a couple of guys to jump in the medical rig and bring it with their gear, just so we have it there in case, you know, medical needs arise. Especially if it happens prior to Dodge Center ambulance getting on scene. And so that's how we respond right now. That would be the same response after, you know, moving forward with the medical only members. If those members respond and they're able to respond to that, then they would take that versus, you know, the couple of firefighters. And that's how they would. They would just respond for the medical response only. Yep. Versus us taking a couple extra firefighters out of service, really, you know, for the fire side. So, and medical calls are just already, everybody responds, so.
Do you have any questions, Dan?
No, I mean, I think having the split is probably essential. I just want to make sure the council is on board with that and they understood it. And also, just asking a question about how it will work with the Relief Association. So you're just going to consider these folks as regular members?
So I've checked with the state because I wanted to check right away if that's something that, because right now the state does not have, on the medical side, they don't have their own separate retirements and stuff yet. A member's a member. They just fall in under that. We've got set to come to our next Relief Association meeting, the amendments to change the firefighter verbiage to member verbiage. So once that's approved by the board, then you guys will be seeing that verbiage come to you guys for approval to change our bylaws on that front. So,
no, other than that, I don't have any other questions.
Yeah, I'm just still hung up on the fact, you know, I know a member's a member. I just worried about somebody's joining as an EMR, and that they're going to want to hope that they can move up to be a captain or lieutenant, and I want to make sure that is fully listed how they'd have to get there before they join, because I'm just afraid people are going to come and then you're going to lose them if you get some quality, because they thought they were going to move up, and you're saying right now you have to be a firefighter to move up.
I would say that right now, Dan, but I'm not, I can't tell you that, you know. If the two members that we're looking to potentially put on, if they're, you know, absolute rock stars and change our mind for some reason,
as the numbers increase, we could look at a tiered system where you have the fire EMR chief, you have a deputy chief for each EMR and fire, and then it branches out.
Yeah, eventually. I mean, that's, and like I said, that's, I appreciate your concern. I do. But I think
I don't have a problem with it. I just want to make sure if they are coming on that they understand that there's different levels for them at first, and it could change. But I just want people to know that if we do approve this, that is in writing, so they know, so they're not caught off guard and it's like, well, I quit this place. It's, you know.
I understand your concern, but I don't think it's a concern, at least at this point.
But I just don't want it to become.
No, and I won't let it. I won't let it slip through the cracks. We'll adjust it and get something put on in writing on how that would play. So
that was my only big concern. Really, yeah. I mean, it's a good project. I just wanted to make sure that people don't get one idea. But
yep.
Approval for the EMR position.
I think so. Yeah, we'd be looking for a motion to allow for that job description to be used for the fire department.
I'll make a motion to approve the EMR position description for the fire department.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you. Now we got the fire chief and assistant chief descriptions. And the one I see, and I know you crossed it out in here, and where is it? Just bear with me, Joe.
No, that's.
You've crossed out. Okay, come on. Performs the duty of firefighter. If you're going to be the fire assistant chief, I still want that listed in there, because I know you're a firefighter, but.
And I think I did that because I think it says the very, like.
But I tried to see where you said that it.
Yeah, I thought it said it somewhere else.
Five, it says response to all emergencies. Well, you're responding, but it doesn't mean you're actually there as a firefighter. You could still be there directing only. I think it should still list that they're there to do the job. It should just state in there as a job title, you know.
Yeah, I thought that one, I thought I had it in there somewhere else. That's why I thought it was doubled up. But, yeah, if it's not and I missed it, that can.
Well, maybe it is. I just didn't see it, too. I tried to go back and forth, and it was.
There's a lot in these.
There's a lot of different, you know. And if it's in there, my apologies. I just wanted to make sure. Because, you know, I see, you know, it says, like, responds and helps direct, but I didn't see where it actually said they were there to be doing it. But I kind of kept flipping back and forth, so I got a little confused.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's probably what I was thinking. If you look at, like 5 and 6, it says responds to fire alarms and directs all fire activities. 6 is responds and manages, you know. Yeah, if you want the specific performs duties, I'll just put it back in there.
I think I prefer that just because then they know that they can't just show up. And I mean, I can't see anybody not doing it because, I mean, they've made it to that point. They're going to want to do it, but it's just nice.
Would we be changing it to performs the duties of a member? Because we just talked about changing the verbiage of firefighter to member.
Yeah.
Because you're also going on EMR calls. So if we're going to change the verbiage on one end, shouldn't we also change it on this one?
Oh, that'd be a good point.
We're going to have, change them on.
I mean, we may end up having to update that verbiage, you know. We're using verbiage a lot tonight. We may have to end up changing that word in all the job descriptions for the whole department because that'll be a transition for them. So that's a good point.
And you could put it as, instead of just saying member, you could say because it's your performing the duties as a firefighter / medical officer, or medical. Because then it designates. Otherwise, if you just say performs the duties as a member, what's the member, you know? Because they are, to be the, as of now, to be the deputy chief, you have to be a firefighter. So it should say the duties of the firefighter / medical officer or medical responder. In my opinion.
If all firefighters are going to continue to also respond to medical calls, then yes.
And which is what he's saying right now. Yes.
So
it should say firefighter and emergency and medical responder.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any, that was the big one that jumped out at me. I know. I see you'd crossed out some of the trainings, but you had said some of those are hard to get.
So I think that number 14, the fireground management stuff, that's changed over the years. When these, like I was telling Linda, I think it's been 14 or 15 years, I think, since we've looked at these. That was the name of that leadership class at the time, and it was a three-part class that Riverland offered. Riverland's going through some leadership changes on their director side over there, so I'm assuming some of those classes are gonna change, because right now that particular series of classes isn't offered anymore.
Okay.
So that's why I wanted to strike that one and get that out of there. We are currently, you know, outside of the regular state schools and stuff like that. I mean, we're always looking for new classes and things like that that we can get to help with leadership, you know, for the guys. So.
So that one will be taking that one out of the chief one then too.
Yeah. Yep.
But that's not tonight. But that's something we'll be.
Yeah, I didn't go through a lot of that, and again, Linda and I have been kind of talking back and forth about some of that too. You know, obviously we want these two, you know, the deputy chief and the chief one, to really kind of mirror each other, other than, you know, possibly the experience portion.
Yeah, because I had them include the chief in our package so we could cross reference.
Yep, and it's been a while since I've looked at that, but I'm pretty positive they're just about identical.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
there isn't a whole lot that's different between the two.
Well, is there a reason for eliminating the musters at within 5 road distance miles of the fire station?
What's that?
Was there a reason for that?
Yeah, we changed the.
Remember why?
We changed it to be so many minutes away instead of miles. We did change that.
Yeah.
Well, and it,
a couple years ago.
It's kind of gotten to the point where, I mean, obviously we're not going to put somebody on, you know, like I just said, that's Rochester because it's not necessarily feasible. But I feel like with the lack of volunteerism in today's world, we've got to be able to open and expand that a little bit, you know, to try and help and assist with some of that. So we want to try and be able to recruit as far out as we possibly can.
I didn't know if that increased your applicant pool, but yeah, I was just curious.
Yeah, a little bit. We do. I did get a couple that were Manorville, but were within the. Yep. The other thing just to note, I don't have it actually marked off, but right underneath number 14, the successful completion of the IS classes, those classes, the 300 and 400, the two ICS classes at the end there, those are really, really difficult to obtain because one's a 3-day and one's a 5-day. In-person class where the other ones are all, you can all be done online. So that's just so you're aware, obviously we want guys to go get those classes done and get them done as quickly as possible, but they don't, you know, after 9/11, that stuff all changed in a hurry and those classes were readily available on a regular basis in the state. But now they're not. So, and those they're just difficult to get to. So
does so instead of taking them out of there, you could just move them down to additional desirable qualifications.
Yeah,
because you still want them to get. Them,
we would. I mean, they are nice if you have them, and guys have had the ability to get them. We appreciate that. They're good classes to take. They're definitely educational.
So I would just suggest moving them down under additional then.
Yep. I just wanted to give you the heads up on that.
We got any other questions? Did you hear anything from Paul?
I don't think we had any feedback from Paul on that.
Okay. Just making sure we could hear from everybody, just in case.
And as you well know, these are obviously fluid documents. We can change them whenever. So if Paul's got, you know, something crazy that he wants to talk about when he gets back, that he wants to see added or removed, that's easy enough to make those adjustments.
So before we had approved it, could we get actually a new job description list without all the final, so we could look at it before the next meeting and make sure that we've read through it all? I mean, and we got all the changes exactly where we want them.
I think that's fine.
I mean, is that enough time before interviews?
Well, I think what we would do is we'd create a working document. And so that working document, that draft, would be what they could use for the interviews, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're not looking at a lot of tweaks.
No.
As a matter of if it's a grammatical issue or something like that. I mean, I think we understand, you know, the assistant chief's role. I mean, it's going to be the chief if they're not there. You know, they're going to have to do almost everything the chief does if the chief wasn't there. So, I mean, I think for the interview process, I'm not concerned about that. I think we're close enough to that. But, yeah, we can definitely create a draft. And maybe, Linda, you and I can sit down with Joe or talk about it a little bit more, and then, well, that's good then. Yeah. we'll have something for you. Okay. Don't worry.
I just thought it would be a lot easier if we could all look right one more time and make sure we weren't cross-referencing. And,
sure.
But, you know, I have no issues with making, like you say, a draft right now. Like
Linda will be
discussed.
Busy the rest of this week working on that draft before she leaves.
But what we discussed tonight, you know, the things we've
I don't moved, think it'll be that complicated. No. I mean, it's mostly just changing some of the wording around.
Yeah. But I think we've got enough without approving it tonight that, you know, you've got a working document that you can do your interviews. And
when are the interviews scheduled for?
Well, I was just talking with the council members before the meeting. It'll be probably the week of the 6th, but definitely after the 6th.
Oh, then we got time because the next meeting will be the 27th.
Yep. So we're closing. I told the members next Friday, the 22nd, was the deadline. I've heard from three or four members that they were potentially interested. Currently have one application, but I'm assuming I'm going to get at least two, if not three more. Okay. So.
All right. It's my papers here.
Thank you very much for calling, Joe. I appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah, not a problem.
Thank you. I know we had a lot of discussion there. That's why I wanted to see a final.
Sure.
Makes just sense. Make sure we're all looking at the same thing again. Gets to be a lot. Okay, so that's all that. Anything from our attorney? Nothing. Correspondence, is there anything anybody wants to discuss there? Not? I will take a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Ryan, do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thanks, Sheldon. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you, everybody. Have a good night. No, but you were here.